Okay, there's a lot of people I don't know here this morning. I was not really expecting that, but that's great. It's like extra pressure for me. Okay, so I told, Tim asked me this morning, like, how, do you know how long this is going to be? And I said, well, not really, but I know how much I have prepared in pages. And I wrote out like 2 pages of a preamble so that like the writing part makes sense. Otherwise, it's just sort of out of context, and it might make sense and it might not. So some of this was in the blurb, and it's just a bit more expanded because, you know, honesty is, I guess, important, and honestly, I don't often read the blurb. Sometimes I'll skim through it, but I'm probably not the only one, right? So here goes. 10 years ago, I graduated from university and got my first job teaching. And I had trained to be a middle years or high school band teacher, but despite my best efforts, I had trouble landing a job. So what I thought was a desperate whim, I applied for a job teaching elementary music. And I thought the worst that could ever happen would be that I got the job. And I got the job. So I spent like that whole summer peeing my pants thinking, what am I gonna do? I talked to a few friends that had trained to do that, and then like September comes and you just, it's go time, right? So I began my first year of teaching, terrified and almost completely untrained. Because there, like really, there's a huge difference between band and elementary music. The only thing that really connects them is for myself, was I guess just having those musical skills myself, but I mean, it's completely different curriculum, different age groups, so. There I was, sink or swim, right? And my saving grace was that I had the great fortune to work with a teaching savant. And we were both in our first year teaching, but it was clear that she was the mentor in our relationship. She had taken all the elementary courses I lacked, had practicum experience with like top-notch teachers, and was just a phenomenal musician. This is Kathy. Yeah, Kathy's just amazing. And I learned a great deal from her that year, just by watching her, having conversations in our shared office space, watch how she planned lessons, and asking question after question, and sharing in the hardships of being a first-year teacher, because it's, like, that first year is really hard. And even for her, it was good to see it was still hard for her, too. So in the midst of talking through our struggles one day, she told me she prayed for the kids that were the hardest to work with, and arguably the hardest to like. But she wasn't really praying for them, at least not in the traditional sense. It was more to the tune of, Lord, help me love them. Because they're not always lovable, right? But it was about, for her, it was that emphasis on help me to love them, right? And so I sat there and I thought, me, love them? And I did not want to love those kids. Those were the kids that would ruin my best lessons, the kids that wouldn't do something as simple as like sit and listen while I taught them, the kids that gave me pounding headaches and caused me to sit silently in my car every morning, just like ticking down like, oh, okay, now I really have to get up and I really have to go into work. And I just wanted like it to be easy, right? I wanted those kids to get better. And maybe I would like give them one kernel of life advice and they would take it and it would transform them. Or maybe they would just disappear and go to a new school, because sometimes that happens, right? And so that's the honesty of it, right? Sometimes you think, I kind of just want those kids to go somewhere else. They can be someone else's problem and give me like some better kids. And here is the cliche crux of all of it, is it wasn't those kids that were the problem, it was me. Right? And so to the outside observer, like that's pretty obvious. But when you're in that struggle, it's never you, right? And it's not really, doesn't really matter what the struggle is. Most of the time when you start that struggle, it's always somebody else. So in the 10 years that have followed that first year, I can't really tell you that I've reformed my ways and I now spend my hours praying to love my students. Sometimes I have moments where I still wish they would go away. But what I have found is my way to work through those struggles in the classroom and arrive back with a new way to love those students that are the hardest to love, and the hardest to love because they need our love the most, and they don't know how to ask for love. They maybe have never experienced positive adult relationships. And for those of us with positive adult relationships, that's really hard to imagine. But some kids don't have positive adult relationships in their lives. Or they might have for like 1 hour a week, you know? And so what I've done, this is totally off script now, so I don't know if this makes sense. I'll try to go back to here. My way is to struggle instead through writing poetry that reflects what is unique about those students. What is it about them or my relationship with them that holds an emotion or story with telling? How can I capture a dimension of their complexity with just a few lines of text? And how can I give this struggle justice with just a few words? That act of reducing it down really helps me to clarify what is it, right? What's going on? And I didn't start writing with this intention. I write on many different themes, but my students keep poking through. And at some point, I guess I shifted from writing about my students to writing for my students. And by the time I wrestle a poem mostly finished, because it's hard to always know when they're finished, I'm able to return to the classroom with new empathy for that student and a new way to love them. So where is God in all of this? Because we're a church, right? Sometimes when I'm writing, the words come very easily. And I think most people who work like in that creative realm will agree that it's more like you're channeling into the words, and it's not about me and what I know, but about giving into what's already there that I just haven't seen or heard yet, and like stilling yourself down and opening up, right? And sometimes they just come. Sometimes it takes many, many weeks to think through the exact right words, and I think God is in the process of that thinking. And then sometimes I think that pinning down where is God in this is entirely beside the point, right? If we really believe that God is in everything and everywhere, well, why do we have to know exactly where he is? Like, God's everywhere, right? Sometimes just get over that. So without further ado, here are a few poems that I'm mostly ready to share. Some that, like, I sort of tidied up last night. Some that I'm like, oh, they're just not there yet. They're really close. And I hope you can take something away with you at the end of them. Tim Platt and I had talked about, like, maybe we could make this interactive some way. And I really couldn't figure out how to do that. So here's my only teachery thing that I did think of last night, is I have like 7 poems. When you get like those students, you don't get to pick when they come into your life, right? You don't get to pick what order you see them, how long they stay, or what ends up happening. So I thought maybe I'll just turn these over, because right now they're kind of chronological, maybe they're chronological. I'll turn them over, and I'm just going to like flip them like a deck of cards, and I'll have people pick them, and we'll put them in the order that they get chosen. Hopefully this doesn't seem too teachery. Sometimes I do things, I'm like, oh no, that's a teacher thing to do. It's a teacher thing to wear. I'm out in public wearing these horrible Christmas earrings. I don't know, you have things for a teacher salary? Okay, and there's one left. Okay, so when I write these, I do purposefully try to keep the details of my students' lives out of them. You know, for privacy reasons, that if I ever did want to share them, that we protect their privacy, right? A lot of these kids are kids in care. And just, you know, everybody just deserves privacy in their life. So I have their names on the bottom, but that's only really so that I don't forget, because I don't really want to forget these kids that I write about. This one is called Twin Stars. Twin stars pulled too young from the sky. Heavy hearts burdened with silent trauma, waiting, pulsing. Together they scraped the earth, tied now 6 inches too close. Too close to walk with proud feet. You stumble. We fumble to know how best to love you. Instead, you orbit each other in imperfect ovals. Never happy, together. This one has no title. I drive over your train tracks every day, and I feel your loss, an easy empty. Lollipop head. Lollipop head, what's going on inside? Skillfully use that hair to hide your shining eyes. Your body is too thin. Your body is too long. It betrays your strength. You are strong. So kick the ground and fold hunch your wings. I've seen you stand tall. I've seen you sing. This one also has no title. Will you be next? Yours, the next smile to disappear. Leaving behind a childhood, half finished. A memory too thin to hold will evaporate. Colors first, faceless, nameless. I left for a year, and you learned how to read. I came back, and you had become you, the man boy with a book. Please know, my heart swells for you. I never got to say goodbye. I never knew I would miss you. No one told, and so no one tells, and so no one asks, as if your smile never existed. I will never be ready to miss you. I don't think it's an accident this one is last. Because if there's any one of them that I'm like the most emotionally attached to, it's this next one. So it's good that I get to end with it and then I can just like stumble off. It's called Ragdoll Dancer. And there's 3 parts. So this is the first part. And this part I wrote, it's about 5 years ago. And so I see the same student now and he's much older. In these next parts. Part 1. Ragdoll Dancer. Loose-limbed, slack-jointed. Watch as your fingers move the air to paint in unmetered time. Wild eyes untamed by stolen glances. Part 2. Ragdoll dancer, your mother is dying. What will become of you? Your hair is too wild. Your pants are too short. Face far too smooth. How will you parent yourself? With anchorless eyes, with uneven gait, jellyfish spine. Who will hear your unready words? Your mouth is not strong enough. Your teeth, two gaps spaced. Gravity fallen lips, open. Part 3. Ragdoll dancer. I am not ready. It is too late. All my words break. My held breath heart. I am so sorry. That's the end of them. My blues riddle is much faster than I thought. I can't imagine they're done upstairs. So I don't know if we want to just open the forum up, and I'd be fine if you wanted to do like a question answer, or...
I would like to do something like that, Karen.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Okay. Let's... Could you... Well, let's... Before we do anything else, let's just be still. I don't know about you, but oof. I could use a little stillness with what you've shared. So let's have some moments for that, and then we'll have some conversation.
Okay.
Thank you. By the way, I'll turn the podcast recording off at this point, because nobody who comes to a community gathering signed on to have their reflection broadcast to the world. So just so you're aware, this is something we'll share together, but not more widely than that.
Thank you.